Well, the latest study was researched by our next guest, Derek Medema, who is with the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada. It's been a while since we chatted. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. Good to get you back on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me back.
Now, this doesn't affect every family. Like I said, I buy the occasional lottery ticket. My buddy spends his $5 a week, and he's happy and content with that. We're not problem gamblers.
No, well, clearly, it's like similar with alcohol. Lots of people can have a glass of wine and enjoy it with no trouble. There are a small number of people who will get addicted, and it's the same with gambling. Lots of people consider gambling a regular part of their entertainment budget. Can gamble without any problems, but there are a small group who have who become addicted, and it's when we consider that everyone who becomes a problem gambler can be a father or a mother, a parent, a child, a coworker. That's when we can see that the effects of problem gambling spread out a lot farther than that small number of people who do become addicted.
Is that why one of the part you talk about government gambling? You're talking about OLG and things like that. So the government is actually involved. They're actually the facilitators in a lot of cases.
Well, that's right. I'm talking specifically in this paper about government-run, government-sanctioned, government-operated gambling, because the government, as the operator of gambling facilities across the country, not just the OLG, but across the country, the governments find themselves in a huge conflict of interest. Put it this way, problem gamblers. A small percentage of gamblers are problem gamblers. Let's say 3% of Canadians are problem gamblers. They give 21% of revenue. So they're punching way above their weight in terms of how much money they give. To summarize, they're spending way more than the average person. They're some of the big spenders in terms of gambling. And if the goal of the Ontario Lottery Corporation, for example, is to maximize revenue, is to get profits as big as they can be, how it's going to be very difficult for them at the same time to shut the door to their high rollers. Because if they cut out the problem gamblers, they're cutting out a big source of their revenue. So they've got a huge conflict of interest there, and that's why I call for privatization, because that's a very clear way for the government to get out of the gambling business. They can still be involved in helping problem gamblers to curb their habit, but they can tax gambling winnings, they can regulate gambling facilities, they can do all that to make gambling continue to be safe when it's run privately, but then they can no longer be the source of gambling, which leads to these problems.
But don't they, like any other government, and forgive my phraseology here, don't they get drunk on the taxes? Don't they get drunk on the money it brings in?
Well, I think it's entirely fair to say that governments are addicted to gambling revenue. I'm just looking at a Statistics Canada document that shows that in 2008, for example, the government of Ontario brought in almost $1.7 billion in pure gambling profit alone. Almost $1.7 billion in profit. I don't have the numbers in front of me in terms of what exactly, what percentage that is of government revenue all told, but that's a big chunk of money that they don't want to lose. That's a huge chunk, and so.
Because the story we've always been told is we recognize that there a small percentage of gamblers are going to have issues. That's why we dedicate some of this particular windfall, if I can put it that way, to helping. That's why we have gambling cessation programs that are government sponsored, and this part of this money is paying for that. But we don't want to deny those that don't have problems with it the opportunity to participate. That's what we hear.
Well, but again, we get back to the reality of problem gambling when it spins out to family members and coworkers. You're getting up to 25% of the Canadian population that is touched by problem gambling. And when I speak of being touched, these are situations where parents can't buy food for their family, where parents are leaving to gamble with their. I looked at a study where you're looking at their talk to kids of problem gamblers. They're clinging to their mother, crying for her not to leave, trying to make her stay, but she pulls away and she leaves to go gambling and leaves them at home. And so this is a real loss for children of gamblers, a real loss for families. not just financially, but in terms of relationships, in terms of, you know, you could look at lack of food, something as basic of that as that. You could go as far as to say going bankrupt or having to forfeit the house. These are huge. This is a big issue. It's not an issue just of a small number of problem gamblers. It's an issue of how far the tentacles of the damage caused by problem gambling extend out in families and coworkers and social circles.
Mm. Well, I know a similar story to that, Derek. A person that I happen to know in Kingston works shift work. The kids aren't involved, but the minute his shift starts, his wife's at the casino in Gananoque. Like that's her enjoyment. That's where she goes. That's where she spends the food budget. That's you know what I mean. So that's creating an awful lot of friction there.
Well, yeah, and that's when it's hard really to know the individual stories, because it's only what makes the newspapers that we can know. But it's this kind of thing that's happening across the country. It's food budgets being spent. It's savings to pay for the car, to pay for the mortgage. It's savings to send the kids to camp for the summer. It's savings for basic things. It's clothes. It's any money that's the more that money that is spent in gambling facilities, the less money there is to spend on basic necessities of life. And this is the kind of thing that's rolling out all across the country as problem gamblers spend that money on gambling and take it away from their families.
Kind of scary. I think we have to be reasonable and responsible from a governmental, from a societal perspective. We have to be reasonable and responsible, because I know people are going to call and say, you know, this is a nanny. You're turning this into a nanny state. You're getting the government involved in everything. And once you do that, well, look out. Then they're going to tell us what to think. That takes it to an extreme, but that's an argument I hear on a regular basis here.
Well, but in terms of my argument in this paper, I'm moving the government away from a nanny state, in one sense, to call for privatization of gambling facilities is to get the government out of gambling facilities. Yes, they would continue to regulate, but I would hope no one would argue that. Like, I certainly don't want to see the gambling privatized and then it become a wild west of gambling facilities across the country. I want gambling to be regulated so that it can be a safe as possible, but that's not to call for a nanny state. That's the call for the government to get out of this business and regulate it well.
Perfect. Thanks, Derek. I appreciate your time today.
Okay, thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Derek Medema is the lead researcher at the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada. How problem gambling affects families. So what do you think?